From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast, a very low-tech Wildcast Podcast. I'm Arizona Daily Star sports editor Ryan Finley, here with Michael Lev. Michael, there is so much going on in the world of Arizona football that we had to get together for somewhat of a emergency podcast here.
Yeah.
Let's start with the saddest news of the day. As we learned this morning, and the family confirmed, that Dick Tomey, the Arizona Wildcats coaching great and better than that, one of the better people we've both had a chance to meet, is battling cancer. It's lung cancer. He is now at MD Anderson Medical Center in Houston. Clearly, this is a serious issue for him and his family. Before we get started, I just want to wish everybody here wishes him the best. That there aren't many guys greater than Coach Tomey, and to write that he is 80 years old in the story that we have up right now on Tucson.com is somewhat amazing, because to me, he is not an old man, and I prefer not to think of him as being sick. He seems indestructible to me.
Right. I mean, I've had limited interactions with him compared to you, of course, and, or our colleague Greg Hansen, who's known him forever. But
30 years.
The few times that I have met him, the nicest guy, the most generous, the most gracious with his time. I mean, I sat down with him last summer for over an hour. We met at the lobby of La Paloma. He lives nearby, to talk about the 1998, Arizona football team, which a lot of people would say is the greatest team of all time. For this school, they went 12-1, right? And that was the season where they had the leap by the lake. Mm-hmm. The season ended in sort of bittersweet fashion. They thought they were going to go to the Rose Bowl. It didn't work out that way because Miami beat UCLA, long story. So they ended up in the Holiday Bowl, and they crushed Nebraska to finish that season. He later had a season where they went 10-2, is that right?
Earlier. 1993, they went 10-2.
Right. 1993 team was 10-2.
They beat Miami.
12-1.
Right.
He's the winningest coach in the history of the school. You know, two seasons with double-digit victories at a time when they weren't playing as many games as they are now.
Yep.
Is an incredible accomplishment. Everyone I talked to for that story had nothing but kind things to say about Coach Tomey, and it was a lot of emphasis on family and team and putting, kind of sacrificing your ego and your own personal stats for the good of the group. I mean, somehow they pulled off a quarterback platoon that year. I mean, you almost never see that actually work.
Ever. In practice.
But to me, that's just sort of like that represented what those teams, that program, and that man were all about.
Two Dick Tomey stories, and then we'll get on to other news.
Yeah.
Dick Tomey, they talk about family. If you get hired as a football coach anywhere, you talk about family and culture and all of that stuff, and it's so cliche. Dick Tomey lived that. I mean, lived it. Did you know, Michael Lev, that Dick Tomey missed a football game, a U of A football game, to attend the funeral of one of his players who had died?
I did not know that. When did that happen?
Damon Terrell, I think it was the late 80s. Dick Tomey did not attend a U of A football game so he could be at Damon Terrell's funeral. I thought that was great. Secondly, it's weird. People conflate or confuse what happened in his last year in 2000. He had kind of a win or else game against Arizona State. He had been pretty much criticized all year long for being uncreative on offense. People, I think, still kind of thought of him as this kind of stodgy old football coach. And he said he made the decision to resign even before Arizona played ASU in that win or else game. And he did it because he said that if he stayed at Arizona much longer, he'd get bitter. And he did not want to become bitter towards the University of Arizona, which was a place at that time that had employed him for 14 years. How many coaches would do that, right? How many coaches would say, for the sake of my feelings toward the university, because I want to move back here when I retire, because I want to bring my kids and grandkids around later, I can't stay here or else maybe my relationship with the school would change. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it takes a special kind of person to have the perspective to realize when it's time to make a graceful exit.
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the way you describe it, it might not have been the most graceful way he could have bowed out with them, like, ending the season on a losing streak and losing to ASU in the last game, and there was some stuff with the athletic director and so forth. But, yeah, he knew when it was time, right? Mm-hmm. And then he kind of resurrected himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And had sort of like yet another impressive chapter in his career. I mean, if you can do anything at San Jose State, I mean, you know, that's pretty much the bottom of the barrel when it comes to FBS programs, which I don't totally understand why, since there's so many people who live there now. But, you know, to have any sort of success there is impressive. And he came back here, you know, the last couple years and has been sort of a, I don't know, advisor, ambassador, for the program. If you ever met him, you'd never think he was 80 years old, right? You would have said he's about 65, right?
Yeah.
Seemed to be as healthy as can be, clear-minded, very enthusiastic about the direction that Arizona football is headed. I would like to think that the folks at MD Anderson in Houston, which is where he's being treated right now, can you know, do their magic and work some miracles and cure him or extend his life for several more years.
Yep.
That's probably the best facility, you know, in the country. I did a story a couple years ago on Dave Wood, former Arizona
played for Dick Tomey,
defensive end who played for Dick Tomey, who had a horrible form of like abdominal cancer, and I mean, the chances of him surviving this were like minimal. I mean, and they basically did perform a miracle at that facility, and he's still alive and well today. So hopefully something like that will happen for Coach Tomey.
Absolutely. And one of the great things to come out of this horrible sad news is the statement from his family that they are taking their cues from him and that they are optimistic and that they are hopeful. And if he is optimistic and he is hopeful, that is certainly a very big deal.
And let me read a tweet real quick here. I got a tweet from someone named Robbie Sherwood. Who says, "I'm a Sun Devil to a fault, but will always admire and respect former U of A coach Dick Tomey, a defensive genius, which I hope comes in handy as he battles this illness."
That's good.
Him well. I thought that was well put.
That's very good. So best of luck and all of our positive thoughts and prayers going out to Dick Tomey and his family. And you know, Tucson is, as we know, Michael, America's biggest small town.
Yeah.
And I like to think that the support of a city of a million people will help him physically. That's all we can hope for now, and hope these doctors do what they do best.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some other Arizona stuff. Obviously, since we last talked, there's been a handful of somewhat big news.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Let's start with DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray hired away from Fox Sports, of all places. He's Arizona's new running backs coach. He has no real coaching experience, but played in this offense in college, has known Kevin Sumlin for 20 years, is somebody who is obviously marketable and visible. What did you make of the hire?
I think it's a great hire.
Yeah.
I think we said it at the time when the rumors were out there, which, you know, Coach Sumlin confirmed at his signing day news conference that, you know, they weren't just rumors. We have talked to him. And I think the way we phrased it at the time was that the ball was kind of in DeMarco's court. And my understanding of things is that that really was the case. You know, he had to make a decision about where he, you know, wanted to take his career. You know, the broadcasting path was there for him. He started working for Fox last year. That can be lucrative and rewarding. It's an easier life than being a coach.
You don't have to recruit.
You don't have to recruit. But, you know, you, at the end of the day, when you walk out of the booth, you haven't really won or lost anything. And sometimes guys miss that competitive element, you know. We haven't had a chance to talk to DeMarco yet, but I bet you that was part of his thinking.
Rich Rod said that one year when he was in broadcasting after Michigan and before here, he said he hated not having a team.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it for DeMarco Murray. Yeah. Again, he only spent one season on TV.
That could be part of it. And he's a young guy. He's 30 years old. I think every single running back who's in high school right now knows who DeMarco Murray is because he just played. I mean, he played in 2017.
Played
in 2017.
That's crazy.
He played for the Dallas Cowboys, and we all know that Texas is a huge recruiting area for Arizona, and Dallas has gazillion prospects and players that Arizona would like to have here. He played his college ball at Oklahoma, so Big 12 country, and he played his high school ball, and he's from
Vegas.
Las Vegas. Yeah. He played at Bishop Gorman, which is one of the powerhouses of the West Coast.
Absolutely.
So you would think if there's a top player at Bishop Gorman, right, that Arizona is going to have an in,
right,
right, with those kind of players, or that they might have a little bit of an edge that they didn't have before. With the top running back from the Dallas area.
Right. And if you're a kid in Dallas and, I mean, you're used to seeing running backs coaches, probably most of whom you've never met before, and then you see DeMarco Murray, who's young, cool, recently out of the NFL. I think that that will certainly help Arizona in the area of recruiting. With more assistant coach movement here, the Wildcats lost Joe Gilbert, their offensive line coach. He was a huge part of their success, I think, this season. And their offensive line may have been their best position group.
I would say the most overachieving position group.
There we are. How did this come about, and where does Arizona go next?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to contrast the role of the running back coach to the offensive line coach, right? When Coach Sumlin was putting his staff together, he said, everybody needs to do everything. We want teachers, we want recruiters. But I think there are different degrees of those skills that each guy has, right? I think with the running backs coach, that the recruiting piece of it is more important than the skill development. I mean, running back, there are important skills that you need to develop, blocking, reading defenses, et cetera. But a lot of that is instinct, right? A lot of that is God-given gifts, being able to read a hole, make a move, so on and so forth, right? You want to get the guys in here and coach them up to a degree, but it's important to get that high level of talent. Offensive line coach, much more about techniques and fundamentals. And you're maybe not going to get the most athletic, natural dude in here. I remember talking to the former offensive line coach, Jim Mihalchik, several times about how it's just an unnatural position, period. Like, you're moving backwards a lot of the time when you're pass blocking, right? I mean, it's just it's not something that comes instinctively. So it's important to have someone who can really coach guys up. And I think Joe Gilbert did an exceptional job of doing that. He had an NFL background. So I think when you bring in someone who's got extensive experience and recent experience in the NFL, I think you know that maybe this guy's not going to be here for the long haul.
Right.
Right? But you also try to just assemble the best staff that you can, right? And you want to win right away. And he took a group that had no experience, right? There was one player, Cody Creason, who had any starts in college. Leith Freck, unavailable for the first two games. Then he got hurt and was kind of in and out of the lineup. Walk on at center. They had hoped to get this transfer, Robert Conjol, eligible, and they couldn't. And they end up leading the Pac-12 in total offense and rushing, right? And meanwhile, Khalil Tate is hurt, and he's not running as much. As they had hoped or wanted him to. And yet they still produced, right? J.J. Taylor rushes for 1,400 yards. They gave up only 20 sacks the whole season. I think a lot of that credit belongs to Joe Gilbert. Not only that, they had Harold Goodwin on this staff as an analyst,
right?
Who's primarily helping with the offensive line. Do you know what Harold Goodwin's job is now?
Is he associate head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
That's correct.
Nice.
Which is also where Joe Gilbert has gone as the offensive line coach. So you could make a case, Ryan, that no team in the Pac-12, maybe no team in America, had better offensive line coaching than the 2018 Arizona Wildcats.
How about this? Of Arizona's analysts, one is now the associate head coach of Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the other one used to be the defensive coordinator and associate head coach for the Tennessee Titans and St. Louis Rams, and happens to be in the College Football Hall of Fame in Chuck Cecil. That's a pretty impressive group of support staffers there.
So how important is this hire then?
Huge.
This offensive line coach?
I think more important than running back. I mean, I think if we're talking about it's just a big hire. It's a big hire. And I don't know, you're more familiar with Kevin Sumlin's background and his coaching tree than I am. I don't know where you even start, because, again, it's a little late in the process. Do you get a guy on the way up? I mean, Garen Justice, who Rich Rodriguez hired 3 weeks before he himself was fired, was Lane Kiffin's O-line coach at Florida Atlantic. Is that what you do? Do you go get somebody who has coached with someone before? What's the formula, Michael?
Yeah, like, what do you think? I mean, I think, you know, I think I have a type in mind, and I think it's leaning more toward the older, grizzled, veteran type of coach versus the young guy who's just starting out.
Right.
I think you like to have some balance on your staff. You just hired a 30-year-old with no coaching experience. We just talked about how that job is more of a recruiting oriented job. This job is more of a, all right, we've got our guys, we need to teach them the proper fundamentals and techniques and make sure that they are, you know, the most well-schooled unit on the team. So I think you want to have someone who's got a lot of experience, but also someone who's going to be able to stick around for a while,
because
you don't want to have to be changing coaches, you know, every 5 minutes. You know, Mihalchik was here. Garen Justice was here for 5 minutes, literally here for a month.
Yep.
And then Joe Gilbert comes, and now a new coach comes. I mean, that's three, technically four different offensive line coaches.
In like 14 months.
Yeah, in a very short span, right? Yeah. So you want to have, I think, someone who's a veteran, but you can also kind of get a commitment out of him.
Right.
That, hey, you know, are you going to be here for several years, you know? So it's a little tricky in that regard. The name Charlie Dickey has been thrown out there, longtime Kansas State offensive line coach who was here for a long time. I think Angus McClure of Nevada, who worked with Noel Mazzoni at UCLA, who's worked on the offensive line and the defensive line, would be a good hire.
Good recruiter, too.
Interesting note on Angus is that, according to the USA Today database, he made $195,000 last year. Joe Gilbert made $400,000.
Okay.
So I don't think it would be that difficult to convince him to come here and get a nice pay raise.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's just a couple names to throw out there. It probably won't be either one of those guys because, you know, Kevin Sumlin is pretty stealthy about these things, and it's usually not, like, the obvious choice that you think.
Well, and we had heard, too, right, before DeMarco Murray, was that the name would surprise us.
Yes.
And Sumlin, it seems to me, kind of enjoys doing that.
He does.
So maybe we'll be surprised. If I can make just a quick, short, impassioned plea for Charlie Dickey.
Sure.
You want a guy who's sort of an auto mechanic on your football staff, a guy who can kind of, you know, slide underneath the car, fix what's broken, and tell you how he did it. That's Charlie Dickey. Charlie Dickey is an Arizona Wildcat to the core. Played here, coached here for a decade or more. Moved on to kind of bigger and better things. Ended up at Kansas State, where he was getting paid incredibly well on Bill Snyder's staff. Believe his wife was a former U of A basketball player. I think if Charlie Dickey wants to remain in coaching, I'm sure he would walk here. This would be a huge job for him. And we've talked in the past, Michael, that it's not super important to have Arizona guys on your football staff, but it'd be nice to have one or two. And to me, Charlie Dickey is the embodiment of an Arizona guy and somebody who I think would do a very good job here.
Kansas State for a long time. Wouldn't you say that Kansas State is kind of on the Arizona level of things?
That's
as far
right.
as the type of – the level of player you're going to get in here? It's not going to be – the every guy's not going to be a five-star, and very few of them are going to be four-stars. But, you know, can you take that three-star lineman and turn him into a viable – Pac-12 or, you know, Division One starter, like Leif Freck or Jacob Alsadek. You know, I think that's what you kind of want your offensive linemen to get to, right?
Sure.
That's the level of player you're probably going to get in here for the most part. And if you can turn them into competent players, you can have a good offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about P.J. Johnson real
quick.
Yeah,
other side of the line.
Other side of the line. And again, this was sort of... Maybe it wasn't unexpected news necessarily, but I think it was a little jarring in that you and I had both believed that maybe he would be back for another year, and instead P.J. Johnson, who's a likable, dynamic, and very talented defensive lineman, he's going pro.
He is. Yeah, I have the official list has come out within the last few minutes here.
For real?
From the NFL, 103 players on it. Just did a search for the word Arizona. Two came up. One Arizona State, N'Keal Harry, we knew that he was entering the draft. And P.J. Johnson is in the category of the following players inquired about their draft status and are eligible for selection without the need for special eligibility. His eligibility was up.
Right.
You know, if he had come back here It would have required a sixth year. Mm-hmm. He filled out all the paperwork. He did that, which mm-hmm. I think was one of the reasons that people within the football office thought he was going to come back. Mm-hmm. But then he went home for Christmas break, and he hung out with his kids, mm-hmm. you know, and he sort of the bond was, you know, was reformed, mm-hmm. you know, between him and his two little children. And he realized, like, you know, I can't go back to Arizona mm-hmm. and be apart from them for another year.
He can't go play for free.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he felt a strong obligation to provide for his family. Mm-hmm. And that's always been kind of his number one motivation. And so he's taking the plunge right now. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him for that. I don't mm-hmm. think any Arizona fan can blame him for that. The consensus sort of reaction, you know, when that news came out from Arizona fans was, this is a bummer. We're mm-hmm. sad to see him go because we know we'd be a better team if he was on it. Mm-hmm. But we can't blame him.
Right.
He's got to do what's right for his family. So
right.
as far as the team goes, it is a big blow, mm-hmm. right? Because this is someone who was among their top three defensive players last year. You'd hope that he'd come back maybe even in better shape
yep.
this year and just be a force in mm-hmm. the middle of the defense. As I brought up to you before, Ryan, what is the hardest thing to find in college football?
A war daddy defensive lineman.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Especially on the West Coast.
There's like six of them in the world, and they all go to Alabama, LSU, Auburn,
Clemson,
sometimes USC, but mostly in the SEC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hardest thing to find. Hardest thing to replace. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably going to add a grad transfer or maybe mm-hmm. another junior college guy just mm-hmm. to get another body in here. We sort of forget that, you know, a couple weeks from now, the official mm-hmm. signing day.
Right.
That's still a thing.
That's still a thing that exists.
But, yep. I mean, but Arizona kind of, you know, they kind of closed the book
right.
on new additions. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible they could bring in someone mm-hmm. who would be, you know, a high school player or a junior college player. But I think more likely they go the grad transfer route and try mm-hmm. to get somebody in here to plug that hole. Mm-hmm. Are you worried about this?
Yes. Like, yes, it's huge.
I mean, do you think...
We've talked for 5 years. Well, maybe not you and I.
Yeah.
I have screamed for 5 years that, you know, you need to get defensive linemen. Rich Rod's defensive linemen were notoriously slight or flawed in one major way. Right? They'd get a guy, but he'd be 23 years old and he'd be here for a year. Or they'd get a guy and he'd be okay, but he'd be 235 pounds. Like, you need guys. And they finally get a guy... And he becomes, I don't know if he was the heart and soul of the football team, but my goodness, he was a very important part of what they did last year. And you get the feeling that he wanted to stay, that they wanted to have him stay. And had he stayed, he would have been sort of lowercase f famous in Tucson next year.
Mm-hmm.
But that he couldn't. And you know, and I know, having kids changes your decision process.
Yeah.
You're doing things with your family in mind, and sometimes that means relocating, and sometimes that means doing something that you know is for the best. And PJ Johnson is doing what he thinks is for the best, and we wish him luck.
One interesting note mm-hmm. In the Pac-12 about underclassmen mm-hmm. entering the draft, USC did not have anyone.
That's weird.
For the first time since, someone just tweeted, for the first time since 2003.
You know what that means to me? They're not getting players.
They're not getting the elite level players.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about recruiting real quick?
Yeah.
Speaking of elite level players mm-hmm. and kids, as far as I know, Kevin Sumlin and his football staff have not visited my first grader's elementary school yet, but give them time. It seems like every day you go on Twitter and they are visiting a different high school in the state of Arizona.
I was told from a source mm-hmm. that they visited 102 high schools this week in the state of Arizona. How about that?
And, I mean, we can argue back and forth about how important it is to recruit in-state given the number of D1 players that the state produces. Even if this is just a goodwill tour, how awesome is that?
Yeah.
How awesome is that? I don't think that they believe it's a goodwill tour. I think that they're looking for players. But to take that time, I mean, that's a level of commitment that Rich Rodriguez never showed, that Mike Stoops never showed, that we don't really even see out of ASU.
Well, let me ask you this, mm-hmm. Ryan. Why is it important to win recruiting battles in the state of Arizona if you are the University of Arizona? Why does that matter? I think it does.
I think it's a, well, I think it's a two-sided coin. I think that it's important to win recruiting battles in Phoenix, because if you look at great NFL players, great college players produced in the city of Phoenix in the last 15 years, it's astounding. I mean, Taylor Lewan is making how much money? He's a Scott's or a, what, Chandler guy? You know, Terrell Suggs, Prince Amukamara. We can go on down that list. I think it's very important for Arizona to get in Phoenix. I also think, though, that there's just something. I think you can breathe easier if you're owning recruiting in your state. I think that that is often the first step towards branching out other places. And, you know, recruiting in state should be easy or easier than recruiting somebody from Texas, because these people ideally are fans, or they at least get a chance to watch you on TV every week. I think recruiting in state is, it's such a small world that, I mean, my goodness, they visited Catalina High School. No offense to any Trojans out there, but Catalina High School hasn't produced a Division I football player since the Pac-12 was the Pac-8, right? And they went to Catalina High School because you never know. Maybe Catalina's head coach is an assistant coach at Sal Point in 5 years, and a kid comes through and he'll call Kevin Sumlin. I mean, it's relationship maintenance, which I think is such a huge part of recruiting.
So Kevin Sumlin has had some success in the Phoenix area.
He sure has.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Christian Kirk.
Yep.
Important. Texas A&M.
Yep.
Where did he go to? Do you know where he went to high school?
Phoenix somewhere.
Saguaro.
Scottsdale-Saguaro.
Yeah. Scottsdale-Saguaro, right, which is a powerhouse school. Arizona hasn't had anybody,
right
from that school. Mm-hmm. And you know who else went to Saguaro Scottsdale? Byron Murphy.
He's
from
important.
Washington, who's
yes.
entering, one of the guys who's entering the NFL draft early, should be a first-round draft pick. There's a couple guys from ASU's class in 2017 mm-hmm. who went to that school, mm-hmm. who were among the top five rated players in the state of Arizona. If you look at the top 20, mm-hmm. according to 247 Sports composite rankings, I looked at it over the last 5 years, mm-hmm. okay, 2015 through 19 recruiting classes, top 20. Mm-hmm. ASU's had 15 of those guys.
Okay.
Arizona's actually second among Pac-12 schools with 9, okay?
Okay.
Good, that's good, right?
Who are those guys? Do you know offhand?
I don't have the full list in front of me. But the point I was going to make is that when you drill down a little further mm-hmm. and look at the top 5.
Right.
There's only 2 guys that the U of A has gotten in that time from 2015 to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Keenan Walker.
Sure.
Did not pan out in any shape or form. The other one is Jamari Joyner, who was ranked number 5 in the 2018 class. And we'll see
it's just those
how that
two guys?
Turns out.
Yeah. Those are the 2 guys?
But you know...
Oh, my God.
But, right. But in his time at Texas A&M...
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Sumlin got 3 of the top 5 ranks.
He got more Arizona players while
than,
Texas A&M than
Arizona.
Rich Rod got.
Right. Top five guys
mm-hmm.
In the state of Arizona. 3 for Kevin Sumlin
mm-hmm.
Over, I guess, a 6-year span. 2 for Arizona. One of them was Kyle Allen,
right.
who his college career kind of went off the tracks a little bit. He ended up transferring, but he started a game for Carolina in
absolutely.
The NFL.
Sure.
At the end of this past season, he was a 5-star, top quarterback in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin Sumlin has a track record. He has relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their big word when it comes to recruiting, is building and sustaining relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they went on this tour, and I don't think that it's just for show or that it's something that they're just that they did this one time and they're never going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think they want to maintain these relationships over the long haul and start getting some of these guys from some of these schools where they never get guys like Chandler
mm-hmm.
High School or Chandler Hamilton
mm-hmm.
or Scottsdale Saguaro,
mm-hmm.
right? Arizona hasn't gotten a whiff
mm-hmm.
from these schools. Do you think they will be able to break through and get one or two of these guys per year? Because that's all you need, right?
I think there's something very appealing about the University of Arizona if you're recruiting in Phoenix. I like the fact that you can say there's a Pac-12 school that's driving distance, but it's not in your backyard. It's not where 75% of the kids from your high school are going. it's exotic enough and far away enough to feel like an adventure, but close enough that mom and dad can come down and watch your games. I think that's huge. And the U of A, you've walked through their campus. You've walked through the campus, every campus in the Pac-12. The U of A feels like college.
Sure.
I mean, there are brick buildings and ivy-covered walls. ASU doesn't feel, their campus just isn't like that. To me, if you're trying to sell sort of a traditional...
It's more metropolitan, yes, right?
Yeah. Tall buildings downtown.
Urban, yeah. Right.
If you're trying to sell kind of the quote-unquote college experience, I mean, there's only one school in the U of A, only one school in the state that offers that, really, and that's the U of A. So I think that's huge. And again, we don't expect Kevin Sumlin to get every good player out of Phoenix, but if it could be more of a 50-50 split than it's been, that'd be huge for them.
I say it's getting one or two of those top guys a year.
Yeah.
Which is what ASU has been able to do in certain years. Looking at the top five in 2017, for example, the top two players went to USC. The next three, ASU.
Wow.
Right? And N'Keal Harry. I think he was the number one player in the state in his year.
Yeah, he's good at football. Yeah,
he's very good at football.
He can play.
He's a three and done, probably going to be a first-round draft pick. You know, getting one or two of those guys a year, I think, would be a huge win for Arizona and would really shift the whole dynamic of their recruiting efforts.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, the question that you have is, can they get guys from those schools? Can they get the occasional guy from Sal Point? Right? If you're a Sal Point kid, that's kind of the flip side of the argument you just made, right? Do you want to stick around here and go to the school down the street? Is that a different or exciting enough adventure or experience? I'm not sure it is.
Right. You can ride your bike from Sal Point's campus to the U of A's campus in about 10 minutes. I don't know, and this is a different podcast and something we'll talk about, I'm sure, over the next year. All eyes right now are on Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
Arizona has brought in a head coach and a coaching staff whose sort of main selling point is, hey, they know how to recruit. They've hired a running backs coach who is a celebrity. It's no coincidence that the top player in the city of Tucson is a running back. And to me, we'll know how far Arizona has come in recruiting. We will know that they've come far in recruiting if Bijan Robinson is a Wildcat a year from today.
If you were Bijan Robinson, would you go to Arizona?
I don't know his dynamic. I don't know if, you know, his grandfather's Cleo Robinson, a Pac-12 official, has been forever. I don't know if his family would or could travel to Alabama to see him play every week. I don't know how much he likes USC. I know his favorite player growing up was Reggie Bush. To me, I don't know. I think it depends. I think there are a thousand little things that you and I don't consider sitting here in an office that Bijan Robinson thinks are very important. And that could be facilities. That could be uniforms. That could just be proximity to home. You know, going away to school isn't for everybody. So, I don't know. We'll see. And I'm sure that's going to be the next big recruiting
angle. One last question for you on that topic. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Cam Denson's, I would kind of say, overall negative experience at the U of A would sour Sal Point kids on following his footsteps?
It's a different coaching staff, for starters.
Okay.
It's a different coaching staff, and I have no idea if Bijan Robinson and Cam Denson are friends or get along. Cam Denson, I'm not sure it was just Arizona's coaches who led to Cam Denson having a bad experience. It seemed like they couldn't settle on positions, and he played too early. It's just a whole strange deal. It's possible. And then you look at somebody like Chris O'Dowd, who went to, for every Chris O'Dowd who went to USC and became a great college player and calls it the best decision he's ever made, there's a kid like a John Caduce, who was before your time, went from Sal Point to Notre Dame and was out of school in 18 months. You know, so I think you can kind of pick anecdotally either side.
Every kid is different.
Every
set of circumstances is different. But hey, if you're Arizona, you want to get in the conversation at least with those Sal Point players so they're just not dismissing you. You at least want to be in the top five or the top three at the end of the day, even if you don't win those battles, because that just sort of generates good publicity, goodwill, sort of enhances your brand.
Absolutely. And winning helps. having a dynamic offense helps if you're trying to get Bijan Robinson. I know that they're turning to him and they're saying, hey, guess who led the league in rushing last year? Right?
Right.
So we shall see. I think we have to wrap it up here. We are going a little bit long, but Michael, let's get together here pretty soon. I love that during the offseason here, you're combing through decades worth of recruiting information. That's big time.
I have an Excel spreadsheet right in front of me here.
Oh, my God.
Compiling information.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. For Michael Lev, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.